Right. So, first, let me ask a question, because how many of you know a bit of weak gravitational lensing, like how it's measured and what? Okay, so I'll try to expand my introduction a little bit. I'll give you an overview of some of the things I'm working on right now. It's not only my work, it's a teamwork. It's been a teamwork for over a decade now. But basically, we are getting to a point where observing dark matter with weak gravitational lensing becomes very exciting, because we start to see some tension with Planck measurements, which I'm sure you've heard of. And most of my talk, you know, is around this tension with Planck and what we should do in the future to understand what's going on there, if it persists, of course, for next measurement. So the big questions we are after are those usual same big questions. We'd like to understand nature of dark matter, nature of dark energy. Lensing is useful because it really gives us access to the distribution of mass at very low redshift, so we'd like to do this right. What lensing really is about, that's my one slide cartoon. I don't know if we can turn the lights off. Maybe that could help. But if we can, that's fine. It's okay. So lensing is basically bending of light by curved spacetime, as you see here on the top left. At cosmological scale, the same effect is happening. And you have to distinguish between what we call strong lensing, where big arcs, strongly distorted background images are distorted by curved spacetime. That's strong lensing, to be distinguished from weak lensing, which is shown here. This is a simulation. This is a projected distribution of structures from an n-body simulation, and the red stuff shows you the projected dark matter. So you see clusters of galaxies, and maybe if you look at carefully, filaments and so on. And the white sticks show the calculation you get from lensing. If you had a population of background galaxies, they would be distorted in a way that would follow those shear patterns, right? So it creates basically shape correlations between distant galaxies that have no reason to be correlated if there is no lensing effect. So that's basically what we are after. Try to measure these cross correlations as a function of galaxy separation, as a function of scale. This is a cartoon version of what we are trying to do. If you don't have any lensing, this is a bunch of unlensed galaxies. If you don't have any lensing, what you do is you measure shapes. So the shape's basically two numbers. It's an ellipticity. The size of the ellipse doesn't matter. We turn this into a number we call shear, gamma, okay? And you can calculate all sorts of cross correlations as a function of separation between the two pairs. In the case of no lensing, there is no preferred direction, so if you calculate the average pair shapes, you get zero. So that quantity we call the shear correlation function. If there is no lensing, this shear correlation function xi is zero. When you have lensing, there is a preferred direction, right? And you can start building up statistics, measuring all sorts of statistics. I won't get into the details here, but things like we call gamma t, that's related to the tangential projection in the local frame, or gamma r, which is projected related to a so-called radial projection, which doesn't mean much. But you can do all sorts of projections in the local frame and correlate galaxy shapes in different ways and measure this as a function of galaxy separation. So to make a long story short, you can measure two quantities. One is called xi plus. The other one is called xi minus. And those two xi shear correlation functions are two different ways of combining these shape-shape correlation functions. And you measure this as a function of separation. And you do it, you do this measurement for many galaxy pairs, and you stack all the pairs, and that's how you build up your signal-to-noise. From the theory side, how the measurement relates to theory is explained here. This is the xi plus correlation function. Basically, mathematically, you can write it down as a k-space integral of some power spectrum. It's called the convergence power spectrum times some window in Fourier space. Window is Fourier space is given to us by mathematics, so the pair configuration or filter you use, so that's no problem. This quantity here is where all the theory we are interested in comes in. So this convergence power spectrum can be rewritten as a redshift integral, so line of sight integral. Lensing is essentially a projected thing, right? So it's a line of sight integral of the three-dimensional mass distribution, P3D, times some function of redshift distribution of things. And by things, I mean redshift distribution of sources and lenses, both. So technically, that means when you measure this guy here, there is a similar relation for xi minus, I'm not showing, but so when you measure xi plus or xi minus and want to constrain cosmology from it, you have to get a model for this convergence power spectrum, which means you have to be able to predict what the 3D mass power spectrum is from theory, simulations, whatever, and you have to be able to measure the redshift distribution of things as well. Only when you get those two things right, you can start constraining cosmology. And that basically getting this and this right is the main challenge for us. How you measure shapes, this is a one slide summary how you do this. If you have a distant galaxy, it looks like this before it gets into the telescope or even before it gets sheared. If you have shear applying to it, it gets distorted. To cosmological shear, you won't even see the galaxy image distorted. It's very small. I'm talking about an effect like 1% or 2% distortion at most. So you can see it by eye in a weak lensing regime. So it's distorted. Then it enters the Earth atmosphere. Then it goes onto the detector. Okay, so it's pixelated. And then it's noisy. So you have to try to infer the galaxy, an unbiased galaxy shape from this kind of measurement. And believe me, by experience, this is actually a very good case. A real situation is even worse than that. How you do this? Well, the main problem is basically that step. All those steps are problematic to some extent, but the main one is really this step here. Because you want to undo the effect of galaxy shapes correlations that could come from optical distortions, from your optical telescope, optical setup. There is only one way of doing this, which is by using stars. Stars are not sheared. They give you a local measurement of the point spread function. So they give you a measurement of the PSF. The problem is stars follow exactly the same procedure, right? You don't observe stars. You observe a star convolved with the optical point spread function, which is this thing here. But it goes onto the detector, and there is noise added to it. So you basically have to measure this in order to deconvolve this in order to get some information about the shear. And just by eye, you can see, given the level of noise that's involved here, it's not an easy thing to do. That's pretty much all I'd say about it, that there is more than 15 or 20 years of work that came into trying to do this right, and we are not fully there yet. Photometric redshift, the way it works, we cannot take spectra of everything. Those distant galaxies are way too small, too fine for that. So we take images in different filters, and we have a library of spectral energy distribution of galaxies for different galaxy types, different, you know, at different evolutionary stage. And basically what we do with photometric redshift, we compare those SEDs, theoretical SEDs, to the data we have in different bands, and we try to guess what redshift they are. So it usually works very well. The more filters you have, the better it works. If you extend in infrared, that's even better because you get, you know, you have a smoother SED shape in infrared, so that's better. But it's fundamentally limited by sometimes you have degeneracy. Sometimes you have break in your SED. If it happens to fall just between two filters or just at the wrong position, you sometimes what you think is a galaxy at redshift 1.2 is actually a galaxy at redshift 0.2. So overall, it works very well, but sometimes you have degeneracies that could be problematic. So this is also something we have to do right. Modeling. What we learned fairly recently, actually, is we are looking at the mass distribution in a nonlinear regime. So we have to understand how gravity works at nonlinear scale, but that's not the only problem. Another problem comes in. If you consider that small scale, something else could change, could alter the distribution of mass, which is related to what the baryons are doing. AGN feedback, for instance, could be a problem. And this is something that was revealed by this work using hydro simulations that shows how the 3D mass spectrum in those simulations, different hydro simulations with different AGN feedback levels, compared to the pure dark matter model, normalized to a pure dark matter model, how it varies from the dark matter only case. And you see for k's of one and higher, k of a few, so 1 megaparsec and smaller scale, it can vary greatly. It depends on redshift as well. And if you have an extreme AGN feedback case, which is this blue line here, you can actually see a deficit of power compared to dark matter only. That's quite substantial, 20%, 30%. It's really big. It's a big effect, which we can measure already now today. So that's a problem because this is often referred as dirty physics in the sense that it's very hard to model nonlinear gravity. It's even harder to model bionic physics, right? So that's also something we have to get right if you want to improve things. Something else called intrinsic alignment. Imagine you have a distant galaxy, the one you use as a source to measure the shear, in red here. And this galaxy is lensed by a foreground dark matter halo, this gray thing here. Okay, now at the same redshift, there are also other galaxies, right? So the blue galaxy here, called intrinsic galaxy because it belongs to the DM structure, we know from simulations and theoretical work, we know that halos in the same structure tend to be aligned because of tidal force, right? Their shapes are not randomly oriented. They are aligned, we know that. And galaxies also tend to be aligned with their parent halo. Not completely, but to some extent they are. So this guy G is lensed by DM. This guy I, its shape is related to the DM, the dark matter halo, main halo, main mass distribution. So if you have another I galaxy, those two will be correlated because they belong to the same structure. It's called the intrinsic alignment contamination. It basically creates what may look like a lensing signal, correlation in shapes, but it has nothing to do with lensing. So that's called the II term. And that contributes to the shape correlation signal we're trying to measure. And there is also a signal coming from the GI term, because G will be lensed by DM, so G will tend to align tangentially relative to DM. But I, because it belongs to the DM structure, is radially aligned with DM. So G and I, on average, will tend to have to be perpendicular, on average, because of this intrinsic alignment thing. So, this effect basically correlates a distant lens galaxy with a local intrinsic galaxy. It's called the GI term. And in addition, G is lensed as well. So the Xi plus Xi minus shear correlations functions we are trying to measure, it's basically the cosmological one, the one we are after, plus those contamination. I won't get again into the details, but just so you know, what we are doing at the moment is model those contributions. The validity of those models could be discussed, but I won't get into that. Basically, it depends on some unknown function f, which itself depends on redshift. There are three parameters here. We have no idea what they are. It's the amplitude of the intrinsic alignment. It's redshift dependence, coded with some power, some exponent here, and the luminosity dependence. The dark matter halo usually hosts a massive galaxy at the center. So we can totally imagine that the tidal force depends on the mass of this galaxy because it depends on the mass of the dark matter halo. So there must be some central galaxy luminosity dependence somehow. It must be there. I mean, why not?
So you're interested in power spectrum of lensing
here? Yeah, we're interested in this. Yes, the shear, yeah. So II and GI should be viewed as contamination at that stage. Yes, same redshift. That's the II term. So they both belong to the same structure. Yes, absolutely.
But then couldn't you use I using the
If it's different redshift, if it's this case, then it becomes technically a GI term. So they behave differently. Like they don't contribute the same way to intrinsic alignment.
But then if you don't have the redshift, then
you
don't.
Well, yeah, so this really becomes a problem if the funny thing in the story is if you don't have redshift, if all you can do is projected lensing measurement, this is not a problem at all. Because the lensing signal keeps accumulating right? It keeps adding up. The intrinsic alignment tends to wash out if you project things over a large, thick piece of the universe. So when you don't try to do tomography, which is redshift slicing, those two terms tend to go away. So the situation Planck versus galaxy lensing is summarized here. This is the Planck 2015 result, which we know predicts a high normalization for the power spectrum. And it is not in huge conflict, but it is in tension with lensing results, in particular with our lensing results, but not only. So let me go over an overview of where we are and what tests we've done to try to understand what's going on here. So this shows omega matter, sigma 8, the lensing constraint in blue from the survey we finished now that ended in 2013. The analysis ended in 2013. And that's Planck. So that's where when this tension was first realized. There's a problem here. So in a recent paper, we did an extended analysis by releasing constraints, basically relaxing constraints on relaxing priors on some of the cosmological parameters listed here. K pivot is the inflation pivot scale. And as you can see, it doesn't change anything. I mean, yeah, you get more relaxed constraints on omega matter sigma 8, but it doesn't move things in a way that makes it consistent with Planck again. So the problem has nothing to do with the cosmological model itself. And then in this paper, we looked at...
Why do you say that has nothing to do with cosmological model?
Because if you relax any of this, I'll discuss in more details where the problem could be in the next slides. But it doesn't come from any of those power spectrum related or scaling related parameters. Well, we used very, very comfortable priors. And all it does is extend the lensing constraint along the banana shape here.
But if you have a different model...
Absolutely, so I'll get to that. So before I get to that, let me show you, because we got also lots of criticisms, like people saying, oh, but you did something wrong in your shear measurement or calibration, things like that. I won't name anyone here, not in public. So we went through this, like basically, okay, if we've done something wrong, what could that be? So we looked at intrinsic alignment, the problem I just discussed, like trying to model II and GI term properly. We looked at photometric redshift errors. We looked at bionic physics, the effect of AGN feedback in particular, which could be quite important. All potential theoretical nonlinear errors for the nonlinear power spectrum. We used hydrosimulations for this. And we used a large range of strong and weak priors to do this. And we came up with three cases. Each case basically looked at different priors for those parameters. Intrinsic alignment issue, the bions and the nonlinear modeling issue, and all the photometric redshift uncertainty issue. And we came up with three families of constraints. One called a minimum case, mild case, and maximum case. Maximum case, basically you assume you know nothing about anything. And basically, the constraints evolve like this. So this is the fiducial case. The original measurement is in green. Planck is here, okay? The minimum case is pink. That's pink, so it actually makes the tension worse. And the mid case blue is kind of similar to fiducial case. And the max case is this one, but the max case really, it's probably useless because it rejects so much information, so much of the measurement that's useless. But we get at least an indication here. If you look at the numbers for the mid case, it looks like, well, maybe intrinsic alignment and photometric redshift is where we could push things a bit more to make things agree better. Now, what I'm saying here is a very dangerous game to play. It's there, but again, I'll show more about that for the KID survey, which I'm starting to talk about now. So what I'm saying is dangerous because it's what I'm saying is actually confirmation bias, right? We assume Planck is right, and we try to understand what makes us wrong, which is absolutely the wrong scientific attitude to have. So we decided to really address this question for the kids for the Kilo Degree Survey. So this is a public survey at ESO. It's still ongoing. I will skip that. What we've done here is intensive work on what exactly you just said, Kendrick, on the systematics, anything that could go wrong with the systematics, with the shear calibration, with the photometric redshift things, and also some extra work on the modeling as well. And one of the key thing of the kit survey was this blinding approach. We did some blinding for CFHT lens, but we brought it to a higher level of blinding for kids. Basically, none of us looked at, the way it worked is this. When a catalog, the scientific catalog was generated, none of us looked at the catalog and cosmological constraints from the catalog. The catalog went directly to Matthias Bartelmann, who was in charge of generating two blinds for us. But the blinds saw two fake catalogs based on the true one. And the two fake catalogs are small changes of the real one. Only he knew what the real one was. So what he returned to us was blind 1, 2, and 3, and we had to write all the papers with 3 series of plots for everything. Yes, so triples the analysis time and everything. And then when the paper was about to be submitted, and only the person writing the paper in charge of the work could be unblind, no one else. So an example.
So you wrote 3 different papers? Or?
No, you write 1 paper, but 3 figures. And 3 different conclusions, yes.
Okay, so it's
in the same paper, yes. But I mean, 95% of the paper is the same. Exactly. So I'll skip the details, but just showing you for this omega matter sigma constraints what the blinds are. And then I'll ask you what you think is the right answer. And those who know the right answer, I'm asking you not to speak. So this is blind 1. Blind 1, so this is kids 550 compared to CFHT lens, what I just showed before here. That's WMAP plus ACT and SPT, and that's Planck. So tension is clearly here. That's blind 1 with a 2.3 sigma discrepancy with Planck. That's blind 2 with a 2.8 sigma discrepancy with Planck. And that's blind 3 with a 1.7 discrepancy with Planck. So which one you think is right?
2.3.
Blind 3? Raise your hand if you think blind 3 is okay. Blind 2? Blind 1? Okay, so usually when you ask the question, most people answer blind 3 because it's closer to Planck. The reality, it's blind 1. Yeah, 2.8, 2.7. Yeah. So that's the whole point of confirmation bias. And every analysis like this, especially when you work at this edge of, you know, is my data set intention or not, I think it's a very neat thing to do. It worked very well. So extensions. So more work came into this. I'm not sure what time it is. Could I spend more time on
the
clock here? Okay. For everything else. I'm just showing slides for cosmic shear, but for everything else.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely everything.
So separately,
Yeah. And one criticism we could have is all the blinds are in tension. We could have liked to have a blind where it's not in tension. That would have been nice. So we'll think about it for next time, but yeah. Extension of this survey. This addresses somehow your question and yours as well. These are the things that we looked at. I won't show you everything, but basically, okay. So now we convinced ourselves there is no problem with measurements to a degree where It's probably not perfect, but it can be wrong at the level of 2.8 sigma with Planck. That we convince ourselves that's the case. So if we believe our measurement, if we believe Planck is right, what else could go wrong? Well, let's look at different flavors of cosmology. And that's what we looked at here. So I'll show you some of them. The first one is if you relax neutrino mass, so you set the total neutrino mass free, you include things like potentially you know should be there, intrinsic alignment and bionic physics. The contours, so the Planck contour basically moves this way, so that's the original Planck, that's the one where you let neutrino mass go free. This one is the fiducial kits 450, and this is what happens to the lensing constraint when you let the neutrino mass go free. Viewed in the omega matter neutrino mass parameter space, you basically, I mean, yeah, you don't really see the tension here because it's mostly a problem with sigma. So the neutrino mass basically doesn't help. The degeneracy directions stay the same, and the contours still don't overlap.
Is that using like CMD lensing as well?
No, because there is a specific problem with Planck CMB lensing, so it's not part of this. Well, Planck CMB lensing kind of disagree with itself. I mean, there is this problem, this paper by Gary Hinshaw and what's the first author? Basically, there is a scale below which Planck CMB lensing and Planck temperature agree, and above, they don't agree. So there's something is happening there, and I don't think anyone has a clear idea of what that could be. But Planck CMB lensing is in agreement with other stuff. It's really Planck TT that stands out. Including the bions, like, I guess I can skip that one, doesn't add too much to the discussion. Curvature, if you let the curvature free, well, you have to be a bit careful here because you really want to keep the sun horizon side the same. So you change, you let the curvature go and you let H0 to adjust. So the size of the CMB patches stays the same. If you do that, then Planck tends to prefer negative curvature. That's fine, nothing wrong with this. In the omega matter sigma 8, it moves the whole contour to the right to a higher omega matter. And for lensing, it doesn't change things much. In fact, it makes the tension stronger. The H0 thing is interesting because this is an H0 plot showing H0 constraints from Rizetal, which is right here at the top, and the different H0 measurements you get from Planck for different situations. So lambda CDM, we know Planck H0 is too low compared to Rizetal, that we know. And then if you let those things go free, neutrino mass, which I showed before, curvature, which is just show, to adjust for curvature, you really have to have a low H0, which is strongly inconsistent with Rizetal. I'll show this next, dark energy, what happens to H0. It's okay, I mean, in terms of the error is so large, is it kind of marginally consistent with Riz? Well, not really. And dark energy model, and that I won't have time to show, modified gravity stuff, but we did some work on that as well. So dark energy, if you let, so W is still a constant, but you let it free. So it's not necessarily minus one anymore. Something interesting happens. So in that case, it's here. So in omega matter sigma 8, in that case, the Planck contour goes to the left, goes to the left, and the lensing contour goes from dash to green here. So then the tension basically disappears. There is still something happening in the sense that in sigma 8 omega matter to the 0.5 versus W, kits 450, Planck 2015, we clearly see our intention. Combination of the two tends to prefer a non-LCDM model here. And if you had H0 from Rizetal, it moves up because we know that's what's happening. If you force H0 to be close to Rizetal, it tends to be more consistent with LCDM. So there is an interesting clue, maybe related to dark energy physics.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
I would have thought W is better constant from data. Now, usually, you see the errors of 10% or so on W, but I'm surprised that they move around so much.
Yeah, there is no BAO. Yeah, absolutely. No BAO here.
Ah, okay.
Yes. So BAO comes next. Yeah, BAO comes next. Not this one, but I think the next one. If you choose an evolving dark energy, basically the story is the same. That's in the omega zero, omega A parameter space. Green is the original kits for 50 Lensing, which partly constrain this plane that we know. It's not a big surprise. Planck 2015 is there, right? So JLS is basically the all combined supernovae results. They are spot on here on the LCDM, and that's more or less inconsistent with every combination of Lensing and Planck measurement we can have. They all tend to prefer a non-LCDM case. Combining with BAO, so looking at the same evolving dark energy model, that's where things become tricky. What you see here is JLA plus Planck is here tends to prefer LCDM, so that's fine. But then Rizetal, the H0 measurement, is in tension with BAO, the 6DF survey, and Planck, which is not shown here, but basically it says H should be between 0.59 and 0.69, 95%. And the thing is, if you combine galaxy Lensing, so kids, with anything else, they are consistent together. So something is odd. You cannot reconcile all the data sets with one unique set of values for the parameters and H0. If you let curvature and dark energy go free, that basically you poorly constrain anything. The tension is not resolved really, but also you get a very poor constraint on H, so that doesn't help. There is not enough data to really do these kind of things yet. So the lesson to take from here is Planck and low redshift Lensing, galaxy Lensing, is in mild tension. I said this before, it's not a sign of new physics, but that's interesting in the sense that new data sets are coming up, and we would really like to see what will happen to this. We think that instrumental and measurement systematics, what you mentioned, Kendrick, are controlled at the 1% level, which is not enough. You know, if we get it wrong by 100%, this 1% level, that's not enough to release the tension. So one way forward, and that's really what I'm pushing, the kind of things I'm pushing at UBC now, is to go to higher L values, so smaller scale, to improve but the constraint, these kind of constraints, but also astrophysical constraints. When you go to higher L, as I briefly said at the beginning, the price to pay, you have to be very, very good with your modeling at small scale. Because start playing with small scales where gravity is deeply nonlinear and you have all sorts of bionic effects coming up. So that's what I'm trying to do, and I'll show the next few slides will show you how I would like to do this and the work we've done already in that direction. So back to the bionic physics I showed you in one of my first slides. Remember, this was from hydro simulations. It shows the mass, the total mass power spectrum relative to dark matter only simulation where everything else is the same otherwise, so the same amount of matter and everything. It's just what we are seeing here is the effect of different bionic physics, different bionic models for different hydro simulations. And as I said already, the effect could be very strong. This blue line is one of the strong AGN feedback models, and at k of 5, so to 200 kpc, we have an effect that's 10-15%. So that should be measurable already. So how do we get there? So this, you see this and you think, oh, okay, so the way to go there to measure this is to measure the mass power spectrum very precisely down to small scale, right? Because that's where the effect is. If you do this, I'll come back to this. So if you do this, let me explain this first. So the naive approach, which is not a bad one, is really to try to measure the mass power spectrum down to small scale and see which one fits which model better. the constraint you ask for physics. You can also add CMB lensing measurement, and you can do things like cross correlations between CMB lensing and galaxy lensing. The reason it helps is because CMB lensing is quite far, it's a very high redshift for the sources. So it gives you this huge leverage that really helps when you want to do cosmological constraints. Also, from a technical point of view, the systematics in CMB lensing are not the same as in galaxy lensing. So very likely most of the residual systematics will diminished, even maybe go away when you do this cross correlation. So this plot shows, it's not a measurement, it's a prediction. It shows the CL cross correlation between CMB lensing and galaxy lensing relative to the same cross correlation where you have dark matter only. So dark matter only is the thick solid line here, and everything else are deviations from this, when you include either bionic physics or neutrino mass or both, for two different source redshifts for the galaxy lensing case. So red is where the sources are at 0.5, and blue is where they are at 1.5. The dashed line, so we have dashed lines here, we have dashed lines there, two colors for two different redshifts, galaxy redshifts. CMB redshift, of course, is always the same. Those two sets of lines are for two different neutrino masses, 0.4 eV, which obviously is expected today, and then 0.05 eV. But nothing new here. We know that the effect is a few percent in this range of L. The dotted line shows you the effect of adding AGN physics, AGN feedback, into this cross-correlation. They are here, so the lines are here. The effect is quite substantial. And the edge feedback, AGN feedback model that were used here is not particularly crazy. In fact, it's in agreement with most of what we know about X-ray emission in groups and clusters of galaxies. So there is nothing really particularly extreme about this one. It's a strong one, but nothing particularly extreme. And as you see, the effect of AGN feedback kicks in at L's of 100, 200, 300 in this cross correlation. At the percent level, and then it rises very quickly. In fact, it crosses the effect of neutrino at an L of a bit more than 1,000. depends on redshift, but you get the idea. So the point I want to make is, yes, if you want to probe bionic physics, it's a good idea to look at the mass power spectrum at small scale, but it's even a better idea to look at cross correlations. Because cross correlations give you this extra leverage to constrain those things. Right, so next is an example using hydro simulations, an illustration of what I just discussed here, the effect of AGN feedback using hydro simulations. This is the CL as a function of L, different AGN model, so that's related to the temperature, the effective temperature of the central engine. In the ref green model, you form stars, and there is a stellar supernovae radiative feedback, stellar feedback, but there is no AGN. And in the red model, you don't form stars. So basically, you prevent bions from cooling, so you don't form stars. And that's how the different models look like. So that's cross correlation between CMB lensing and galaxy lensing. So yeah, you can distinguish them if you go to fairly high L. The effect, as I said, start to kick in at the percent level at lower L, but you'd like to do even better than that. So an even better idea is to combine any of those matter-only probes to direct bionic probes. And how you do this is, for instance, cross-correlating things like the SZ to lensing, with lensing. Because SZ probes directly what the gas is doing. So if you have AGN pushing the gas away at large scale, it will leave a very strong signature in SZ, in TSZ. And back to the same simulations, doing the same kind of work, we're working on the cross-correlation of this time SZ and lensing, galaxy lensing, not all sorts of lensing. This is galaxy lensing, this is CMB lensing. You see that the constraining power for different AGN model is even stronger. So what we are working on right now is this triad project, triad because we are trying to combine galaxy lensing, CMB lensing and bionic probes, and do all sorts of possible cross-correlations and see how we can constrain simultaneously small-scale physics, so AGN physics, AGN feedback, and cosmological parameters. This helps because you really reach small-scale, higher K, you have many, many more modes to work with. Signal-to-noise is a lot higher, right? Unlike previous studies, some of studies we've done where by cutting at large scale, basically gets rid of a good chunk of signal-to-noise you can get. This is a measurement on real data. So that shows this cross-correlation between Y, the TSZ parameter, and galaxy lensing from the RCS lens, which is a survey I didn't talk about. It's in kind of halfway between CFHT lens and KIDS. It's a low redshift survey. Those are data points with proper error bars. It goes down because we haven't removed the Planck beam, the 10 arc minutes beam, so that's why everything goes down. And the underlying lines are the different models taken again from hydro simulations. This is, as you can see, this is early stage because the noise on those predictions is fairly high. It's very hard to make hydro simulations. So we are working with hydro people to improve this, in making more hydro sims doing, you know, getting proper covariance matrices for this. It's also very hard. I have PhD student work on this for a year. He doesn't have a solution yet to get a stable covariance matrix that includes dark matter and baryon both at the same time. Interestingly, if you compare the data points to the list of AGN models here, it seems like one is preferred, the red one. All the models here are for WMAP7 cosmology. This one is for Planck cosmology. So interesting, if you compare AGN8 for Planck and WMAP, this is Planck, this is WMAP. There is a huge difference here. The difference between these two is sigma 8. So we know TSZ is very sensitive to sigma 8 because you have a dependence on sigma 8 via the density of electrons, but you have also its temperature weighted. So we know that, for instance, the TSZ power spectrum is sensitive to sigma 8 to the power something like 6 or 7. It's very strong dependence, which is a good and a bad thing. It's a bad thing because, well, in this range of air where you think you are very sensitive to bionic physics, so you could do a clean job for bionic physics only, in fact, you are also sensitive to cosmology quite a lot. But the sensitivity is so strong, and that's the good thing, that there is hope to really measure the two with this trial project I mentioned before, by combining all possible cross-correlations together. This is a prediction.
Does the TSZ, you know, to help with the lensing, do you need the TSZ to be perfectly correlated with lensing?
You mean maps, or?
I mean, okay. So here you're showing just the cross spectrum.
Yeah. Oh, this is TSZ from Planck. I forgot to mention.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So if you compare the cross spectrum to the square root of the two auto spectra, cross-correlation coefficient.
Yes.
So is that near one always, or
in scales? No, in principle, you do a better job with autocorrelation spectra. The problem with TSZ autocorrelation spectra, it's completely unreliable. It's very...
If not perfectly correlated, then how do you then use the TSZ to improve, you know, your knowledge of what the lensing should have been?
So the bions imprint something on the gas, which is not the same thing that matter does,
right,
dark
yeah.
matter does.
But to correct for, you know, the baryon effect using the TSZ, and don't you then want,
Well, I mean, if you just have one free parameter, which is, say, the amount of AGN feedback, then it affects all of the variables. Yeah,
so, So just like a single identity number worth everything, it would be perfectly correlated, right? You know.
But it's not, I mean, we know it depends on whether you're looking at group size, cluster size,
yeah, exactly.
or in the field. It's not perfectly correlated.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, it seems that it will be difficult to make significant improvements using this TSZ.
I would say you can use that to improve your constraint on bionic physics. Because it's not just the kind of things we do. We also look at TSZ stacking and stack cross correlations for different targets, different objects. for groups of different mass range, clusters, for LBGs, and the signal is different every time.
One point is, of course, it's having independent systematics, so that would be the reason you might look at different things. But the thing I do worry about this is that there is a contamination of planted CMOS that does contaminate.
Yeah, we are working on that. Yeah. The contaminant, it's about 10% here. So we have a paper that should be out hopefully soon where we work through the CIP contamination, dust contamination, high redshift dust contamination. The tests we've done seem to suggest really it's 10% at most. In fact, we get like 9% plus or minus 5.
Okay.
Yeah, with Planck data. This is a prediction for what you could do with advanced ACT, and there it's getting really exciting, because if you look at now AGN8 for Planck and WMAP7 cosmologies, solid green and dashed green, they are actually fairly different here. And then if you compare, so Planck, the same cosmology here, IGN8, no cool, they are here. So pushing at small scale, you really increase your signal to noise. One of the things we are working on right now with Gary and his students and my students is to use the ACT data, advanced ACT, it's no data yet, but nothing available. But with the existing ACT data, in the frequency range where it's interesting, so below 217 gigahertz, the beam is 5 arc minutes. So we are combining the ACT, the public ACT data, with the Planck data to build a map that has an effective beam that's smaller than 10 arc minutes, combining the two. And it seems to improve things quite a lot. This is work in progress. We are not nowhere near this, but there is progress being done on that front. Just showing you, that's one of something that came out recently, cross-correlation between kids, 450 and galaxy, so the 450 galaxy lensing and the CMB lensing. So this is a real measurement of what I showed before. In the omega matter, sigmoid contour, this is including intrinsic alignment. This is what we get. So it seems that the tension is still not gone. It's still here. And this is using a different probe. This is CMB lensing, cross-galaxy lensing. It's consistent with galaxy lensing alone. And we have another work in progress where someone is looking at peak statistics, which is, again, another way of looking at your shear information. Peaks are very robust in the sense that they are robust against some systematics you could have in the shear measurement. They are also very robust against baryonic physics, because the existence or not of a peak, we know that, does not depend too much on baryonic physics. Baryonic physics may change the distribution of gas, but it cannot destroy the existence or not of a peak if it's massive enough. So soon we'll have another series of contours, one of them with peak statistics. So looking at cross correlations, looking at different statistics is a way to strengthen our result that, you know, lensing is low redshift, lensing results are sitting somewhere here, and still in tension with Planck. So what I will conclude on this, saying that the next step for us is really to see if this tension remains or not. Again, I'll never say this is a sign of new physics. It's only 2.5 sigma, but I think both teams, Planck and lensing teams, agree that they've done a very good job in systematics. So we get to a point where we have to watch this for future measurements. If it goes away or not, that's key. Doing this, a way of doing this, improving signal to noise, it's combining baryonic probes and lensing. I mentioned this before. So one thing I'd like to highlight, because I find it really exciting, there is so much to do. There is lots of synergy between lensing, so the traditional lensing, cosmic shear, galaxy lensing approach, and anything that's baryons related. So CHIME, TSZ, and upcoming soon better TSZ maps, CMB lensing, CIB, that's tons of things to do. There's very, very little, almost nothing was done on cross-correlations with CIB. And X-ray stuff, I have a student working on cross-correlation with ROSAT data. You know, it's 25 years old. There is still stuff to do with this. So that's exciting. we are working on this. And you know, for another extension leg to this work is to look at higher order statistics. Tomography, everything I showed today use tomography, so you use redshift to do slices in photometric redshift to do slices in redshift for your lensing measurement. But the future, we'll have better photometry data, hopefully some spectroscopy information as well. So tomography is really key, especially for improving your knowledge of intrinsic alignment, which for now is based on a model. Ideally, you don't want to base this on a model. You want to base this on real intrinsic alignment measurement. And higher order statistics. There is very little done in this as well. And I think I'll stop here. Thanks. Questions? Yes.
So one cross correlation you didn't mention, of course, is galaxy lensing, and feedback is coming from the galaxies of some sort. Right? So presumably that cross correlation is going to be sensitive to those effects. And if there's a feedback that is redistributing materially, you can see it in the shape of.
Yeah. Yeah, it should be a very strong effect because you are really probing this. Yeah.
But you have to look at it in the context. Of
I haven't looked at. I'd like to look at, just lack of time. Yeah. It was like about 2 years ago. I talked to people doing the hydroseums and mentioned this. Like, you know, could you look at this for different contexts or different feedback models and. My understanding was someone was working on it. I don't know if a paper was published on this or not. I lost track, but that's definitely a good idea, a good thing to do. Yeah.
So I guess one question is that, is there anything you can think of, any systematic? So you're saying you exhausted all possible systematics, there's nothing I could explain this?
Who knows?
Wake up at 3 in the morning. Is there something that you think, oh, maybe that could be?
I don't have answer to this question. I don't know. That could be. So that's also why, from day one, we really wanted to have all data public. Mm-hmm. And everything is public since CFHT lens. Everything is public so far. Yeah, so there was, I'm sure some of you followed the story, there was some paper saying there are residual systematics in CFHT lens, and they were right. So that's why we wrote, you know, this extended revised CFHT lens analysis, which fixed this. And it was not a shear calibration problem, it was a photometric redshift problem. So, yes, maybe there is a systematics we haven't thought of. So. It's hard to imagine, but yeah, why not? I would say the same about Planck.
Can you go back to the W plots that you had at the beginning? I'm just trying to understand.
Which?
Yeah, I can go back a ways. The ones with W and WA, and then there was a bunch of kids plus H naught plus Planck.
This one?
I know those other people do. So it seems that you can almost get away, like, you're almost at the cross, right? If you look at kids plus Planck plus H naught, you're just a little bit off of it, right? WA of 0, W naught of minus 1. So does that say that if you force H naught, I guess what I'm trying to figure this out. If you force H naught to be the Reece value, then you fix the sigma 8 discrepancy. Is that what that's saying?
Yeah, that's what.
You don't need to do anything funny with dark energy. It's just that Planck really doesn't want that H naught.
You still have a funny dark energy, right?
A little bit.
Yeah. It's not LCDM. You don't have LCDM.
Yeah. Maybe you had one with just W naught.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they in agreement? The Planck then.
So the Planck red?
Yeah, I guess you don't have exact. I guess if you had kids with forced H naught and Planck with forced H naught, would they overlap?
I don't know.
WA zero, W naught minus one.
I I don't know, I forgot. Yeah. Not sure.
All these things are correlated in complicated multi-dimensional spaces which are hard to visualize.
Yeah, it's hard to visualize. Now it's a good exercise to do anyways for understanding how it works. Okay. Thanks.